Hi, I'm Matt Stone. You're listening to Crucial Conversations, a series of five stories of grassroots leadership by people in the disability sector in Queensland. In our previous two episodes, we have explored leadership from the perspective of people with disability and their family members.
You've got to keep asking yourself, where's my heart? Where's my feet? Where am I aligned?
Today we hear from Anne Cross, the founding director of the Community Resource Unit and the recently retired CEO of Uniting Care Community, one of the largest service providers of disability and aged care in Queensland.
Well, things can change, you know. It doesn't have to be the way it is.
Anne is a fellow of the Australian Institute of Management and is adjunct professor of the School of Social Work and Applied Human Services at the University of Queensland. She has also been actively involved in many government task forces and was recognised as Telstra Businesswoman of the Year for 2014. Anne's story is an example of how skilled and committed professionals can partner with people with disability and their families to create meaningful and positive change.
People deserve the opportunities to do better. That, I think, is part of what it means to be a change maker in the disability field, is that you're actually trying to help their voices be heard, but also being careful not to speak for them. My full name is Anne Cross, and I'm one of six children. My mother was a stay-at-home mum. I was born in June 1953 and at Nambour. I was also one of the beneficiaries of Commonwealth scholarships for free education at university. And if you had the grades to do it, it was the tail end of Vietnam. I think it was 72 when we pulled out of Vietnam. But you had Vietnam, you had Springboks tours, the street marches in Queensland. There was a lot going on. Well, things can change, you know. It doesn't have to be the way it is. And that warmed me up for wanting to be part of a new world, really. I was at uni at that point in time and would have been doing probably my first year of a social work degree. I visited Chaloner Centre, which was one of the institutions for people with disabilities, and that had a profound impact on me because what I saw and experienced were these people with apparently very profound disabilities who were, you know, lying on mattresses on floors, in day rooms, dormitories. You saw these very bleak communal bathrooms. It was a very bleak, difficult environment, and the people were quite confronting, really, in many respects. And I went home from that visit incredibly troubled and feeling quite sick in my stomach. I can still see that in my mind's eye today. So I think that was a turning point for me. I didn't know it at that time, really. And it's not like I immediately wanted to get involved around people with disabilities. In some ways, I probably, like many people, you know, probably wanted to, you know, run away from it because it was scary. This was also a time in the 70s of what was known as the Henderson Poverty Inquiry, initiated by the Commonwealth Government. These days we have Royal Commissions. Then we were having an inquiry into poverty, which is very interesting. But part of that inquiry was funding whole lots of innovations, I guess, to look at how you might try and support people out of poverty. One of the most interesting projects, in my view, that was happening was happening in Melbourne at the Brotherhood of St Lawrence, and it was called the Family Centre Project. And it was a project where there were 60 families had been selected to be part of this trial. They were provided with money to bring them up to the poverty line. So the first thing that happened was that income was supplemented to get up to there. And then there were a whole lot of other initiatives that were involved to try and support people to develop their skills, to have lots of life experiences, so very developmental in nature. So 60 families were involved for an initial 3 years, and then it was extended another 3 years. So I wrote to Connie Benn, the head of that project, and said, could I come and do a social work placement with you? I've heard about this and I'm interested. And surprisingly, they said yes. And so I took myself off to Melbourne and worked in this project. That was also a really interesting and pivotal thing, not directly around people with disabilities, although of course amongst these families there were certainly kids with disabilities, but really that notion that you deal with the basics, you give people money if that's what they need. I was living in Richmond, which was at that point a Greek area, and you know, I remember the first Sunday I went looking for a newspaper and couldn't find one in English, you know. So, you know, so there were lots of things that was confronting about being, you know, in Melbourne, but I was just lapping it up and just loving, you know, every moment of it. I think one of the things I learned, of course, was that people deserve to have the opportunities to do better and to have what would typically be thought of as a valued kind of life. So some people did really, really well in this program and some didn't. And that, I think, taught me about a lot about human nature. It taught me about long haul issues, that there's not quick fixes, that it's not always simple answers to very complex problems. And this would have been one of the most complex interventions I've, you know, seen. Even to this day, it would be one of the more complex. And the developmental nature of it stuck with me. You know, this sense that you take a developmental approach rather than a corrective approach to people. You create opportunities and you support people to participate fully in those opportunities, to give them the opportunities to craft their life, but you're not in control. One of the most difficult issues that you face in the service sector is that the sense that there's simple answers to complex problems. Secondly, that many of those answers are thought to be largely instrumental, you know, just very pragmatic kind of things that, you know, if you help people with their housework or you do this or do that, everything will be okay. And of course, we are way more complex as human beings than that. The humanity of people doesn't fit easily with a service sector that's focused on numbers of hours of support, of certain kinds of outcomes. We count the things that are easy to count and it's actually quite hard to come to grips with those things that, you know, are really intrinsic to everybody's humanity, really. But I also got exposed at that point to the work of Wolf Wolfensberger and introduced to the theories of normalisation and later social role valorisation. That was a real turning point because it gave me both the language and the frameworks to understand, you know, both what I'd seen back at Challoner and what I and, you know, what I'd further experienced, I guess, through work around what happens for people with disabilities and what the alternatives might be. When I left university, I went and worked in the Commonwealth Government. The department I worked in was the Department of Social Security. At that point, it provided the Centrelink or Social Security services, and it also was the funder of aged care, of disability services, of childcare services. It ran the Commonwealth Rehabilitation Services and various other things. So I had the opportunity to work across probably all those areas. It continued to be a time of optimism, I think, at that point. The lines were more blurred at that point in time. And of course, we'd come through the Gough Whitlam era as well. And, you know, childcare was introduced. There was a massive machinery of change happening that was being driven through the Commonwealth government, you know, at that point in time as well. So that felt like a good place to be. I had a fantastic boss, someone who utterly created opportunities for me to try out and do all sorts of things. So he'd keep making it possible for me to be involved in this kind of project or that kind of project. And that took me into national efforts on various things or, you know, et cetera. And I always say to people, find yourself a good mentor. If it's not your boss, then find somebody else out, you know, that you can use as a mentor, because mentors are kind of critical. Lots of reasons to be cranky, and lots of protests, lots of street marches, all of those things were happening. And Queensland was way behind many of the initiatives that had happened in other states at that point in time. And there were some things like a particular agreement called the Home and Community Care Agreement between the Commonwealth and the states that would have brought a whole lot of money into the state. So whether you're looking at homelessness, disability, you know, domestic violence, you name it, Queensland was at the bottom of the league table. As someone who had a strong interest in the social service sector, it was just appalling. You know, I was just outraged about that, as were many others. So I do think that there was an element of self-reliance in Queensland, which is actually a strength. You know, like all strengths, there's usually a, you know, a dark side or a weakness. And that was part of what I think we experienced when we then, you know, started to look for opportunities to change the way services were delivered for people with disabilities. The non-government sector largely at that stage was supporting people with either intellectual disabilities, cerebral palsy, and multiple kind of disabilities. So it was a sector that where parents were front and centre. So my connection to families largely came because I had embarked at this point on a master's degree and was doing some research into the participation of people with disabilities and their families into disability services. So I was meeting with lots of families, including the, you know, many of the parents who had been involved in what was Queensland Parents of People with Disabilities, or QPD. And then I, you know, that opened up this kind of whole new world for me, really.
This series is brought to you by CRU, the Community Resource Unit. CRU exists to create positive change so that people with disability will be welcomed, respected and appreciated in their communities. For more information, please visit our website at cru.org.au.
I wasn't part of that early founding of QPD. I was one of the beneficiaries of the fact that the parents had got, you know, got onto it. But, you know, I was blown away by these smart parents who were doing all this work. And I'd always appreciated that parents have done the heavy lifting in Queensland, you know, so whether it was in, you know, the development of what's now the Endeavour Foundation or the Cerebral Palsy League or the, you know, all of these big services were because of what parents had done. So I had known that, appreciated that, etc. But meeting all these parents who were involved in QPD and were really activists, you know, I think I just found a natural synergy, really. And the other thing that was important about QPD was that it wasn't just Southeast Queensland based, you know, it actually had a regional flavour as well. But, you know, at that point in time, two-thirds of Queenslanders lived outside the southeast corner. If you worked in Brisbane, you were very oriented to the regions and what needed to happen for the whole of Queensland and things. I had taken some time out from my role as a director of Commonwealth Rehab, and was doing some research work. So it was during that year, and talking with all these families, we started to grapple with this problem of the impasse between the Commonwealth and the state, and the reticence of the service providers in Queensland to embrace the delivery of services that we thought would deliver more inclusive lives for people with disabilities and offer up new opportunities. So really to break down segregation of people with disabilities from others. We decided to run what was called a SEARCH conference. And SEARCH is a methodology that was reasonably well developed that was essentially about helping people envisage a different future and to work out the pathways to get there. The Commonwealth agreed and funded it, funded QPD, I think it was at that stage, to run this conference. And we brought together 100 plus people, families, people with disabilities, people from government and service providers from across the state, and embarked on a weekend of discovery, of searching for a new future. It was a very, you know, liberating and inspiring kind of event. There is a report, the Pink Book, that documents that process, and there are about 8 or 10 initiatives that had people's names against them to try and further the initiative. These were initiatives that we thought would help change, you know, the status quo. You know, we needed a think tank and a unit that would really help inform and educate and stimulate change in Queensland. So we needed a vehicle that would keep that going, that wonderful spirit that we experienced at SEARCH, that we would keep that going. And that really resulted in Community Resource Unit being founded.
Without doubt, people with disabilities, their carers and professionals in the field faced an enormous array of challenges in the 90s. The Community Resource Unit, or CRU, is responding to this challenge through a series of lunchtime seminars titled Key Challenges for the 90s. The seminars are for people concerned.
I was appointed as the inaugural director of Community Resource Unit. Right from the start, it included people with disabilities, included families, and it included professionals.
With me today to talk about the series is CRU Director Anne Cross. Hi Anne, welcome to the show.
Hi David.
Anne, first of all, why develop a series of seminars like this?
David, as you said, CRU is very interested in supporting people who are concerned about improving the life circumstances of people with disabilities.
And that was one of the unique things about CRU, I think. It was a vehicle that held together those different people who had different roles to play in the sector itself. So that, you know, that was great. And we set off on the journey of CRU.
Staying focused in this time of change is actually quite difficult if you work in the field or if you're a parent or a person with a disability.
In forming CRU, Community Resource Unit, we very deliberately said we will come together as professionals, as families, as people with disabilities, and we'll participate in this as equals. So in those roles, I had no power over people with disabilities or families. If I work in an agency, as I have done, then of course I do have that. So the power differential is different. Now, some books on leadership would call this servant leadership because it's really around raising up the vulnerable, the poor, the people who are more likely to be trodden on. People just thought we were naive Nellies who had no idea about what we were suggesting, that there was a strong belief that people were better off in sheltered workshops, in large group homes. You know, these are homes that have 10 or 20 people living in them. you know, that they would never be accepted in the community, that they would be subjected to abuse and degradation and all the rest. So it was this overprotection of people, this, you know, this pity mentality. It was a mindset issue, as well as an experience issue, but a mindset issue of that they didn't believe people with disabilities would survive and do well in integrated settings. There's all these attitudes and mindsets about people with disabilities that are quite deep and quite unconscious at times. You're actually calling that out and trying to bring out a truth that, you know, wouldn't otherwise be spoken. That, I think, is part of what it means to be a change maker in the disability field, is that you're actually trying to help their voices be heard, but also being careful not to speak for them. I worked at CRU from 1988 to 2000, and then I went to Uniting Care in November 2003. The Uniting Church contacted me as what became the CEO of Uniting Care Queensland. And after a number of conversations, I did get appointed to that role, which was a bit of a surprise to me. It was a big change from going from CRU to a Uniting Care Queensland, which by the time I left had 17,000 staff and 9,000 volunteers and 1.6 billion turnover, involved hospitals, very large aged care services, child protection services, so a very large service. I'm very grateful that I went into the role at Uniting Care having had all the experiences I'd had prior to going into it. As CEO, it was limited what I could do, but I did try to get out to services and talk to people, both recipients of services as well as staff. I tried as much as possible to keep my feet on the ground. And given I also stayed a long time, you know, I was there 14 years, which is these days is a long time for CEOs. I think CEOs should stay longer than they mostly stay. But it did mean that I had a pretty good handle on lots of things that were going on in the organisation, and that kept me very grounded. You know, so going to an aged care facility, spending time in a palliative care unit, being out at the various events and things that you have, all of those things were very grounding. If you think about all of the people that need to be involved in change, you're likely to have people who are with you and think the change is a good thing, people who are definitely against you and think it's a load of nonsense and they just need to wait you out, and the people who sit in the middle are uncommitted. Whether you're changing as a community activist or a service or, as I was, in a very large organisation, you need to concentrate on the people who are with you and the people who are uncommitted, and as much as possible to ignore the ones who are against you. But change can take a long time, and sometimes it's a very long haul. When you are confronting power and authority, be it politicians or bureaucrats or service providers, it is so much more powerful when people with disabilities and families are involved in that. And I think it's in part because the public, the general public, accept, one, that people should have a right to say what's important to them if you're a person with disability and you're able to do that, but also for families, there is an acceptance, I think, that families are doing the heavy lifting and that they are in for a long haul and that they have a natural responsibility for the well-being of their sons and daughters. So I think that helps balance out that power and authority that you, or the imbalance of power and authority that you face when you're talking with politicians and bureaucrats and service providers. It helps balance that out. That natural authority of families is front and centre in those conversations and discussions. One of the things I did while I was there is way ahead of the Royal Commission into Child Sexual Abuse, or the institution's responses to child sexual abuse, I decided that senior people needed to meet with people who came forward saying they'd been victims of child abuse within the services in the past. And so in my 14 years, I probably met with about 100 people. And I met with those people with one or two others, but would spend hours with people just listening to them. If you're interested in change, you've got to align yourself with people with disabilities and their families. It doesn't matter what role you're in, that has to be where you align yourself. So even when you work in an organisation, you've got to keep asking yourself, where's my heart? Where's my feet? Where am I aligned here? Because the pressures in organisations are immense. Many, many vested interests floating around, and it's quite hard to keep that focus on people and families. So that alignment, I think, is really important. Most people are still reliant on the large organisations for their service delivery. So you've got to tackle it. So that's what I guess I was trying to do. I guess time will tell how robust the changes are that people are still engaged with since I left. You know, how robust they actually are, whether they can survive the test of time.
This podcast was funded by the Anne Cross Leadership Initiative, established in 2017 to honour the contribution of Anne Cross to Uniting Care Queensland during her years as the Chief Executive Officer. This partnership between Uniting Care and CREW aims to contribute to the development of strong, principled leadership amongst people with disability and families throughout Queensland in order to contribute to better lives for people with disability.